It's here and now. And sometimes here, we like to revisit authors whose names may be revered, but we may not remember exactly why. So, for your consideration today, American author John Cheever. Born in Quincy, Massachusetts in 1912, he won a Pulitzer and a National Book Award for his 1978 short story collection, The Stories of John Cheever. He's been called the Chekhov of the suburbs for his depiction of the quiet desperation that can lurk behind perfectly manicured lawns. But quick, name three of John Cheever's most famous short stories. I'll wait. Here now, pop culture critic Renee Graham is a big fan, and she's in the studio. Renee, quick, three story titles.
The Country Husband, The Swimmer, and Oh, Youth and Beauty.
Okay, so when did you first start liking Cheever?
I first learned of Cheever. I think I knew his name, but I'd never read any of his stuff until I went to college, and we had a American literature class, and we were assigned The Country Husband to read. And that story was a revelation.
Why? What was it about?
It's about a man named Francis Weed who suddenly realizes how empty his life has become. And the way he realizes that is that he survives a near-death experience when his plane crashes. And it's this exciting moment in his life. And he kind of realizes that, oh, my God, if that's exciting, what's the rest of my life become? Yeah. And it's just he goes through these sort of changes of realizing that who he thought he would be is not the man he's become. No. Even though he has all the trappings of success, he has a beautiful home in the suburbs, he has a wife, he has four children, he has a great job, but he's grindingly unhappy.
James Walcott in Vanity Fair did a piece on Cheever when there was a biography out in 2009. And here's a line from Cheever in Esquire in 1960. My God, the suburbs, they encircled the city's boundaries like enemy territory. And we thought of them as a loss of privacy, a cesspool of conformity, and a life of indescribable dreariness in some split-level village where the place name appeared in the New York Times only when some bored housewife blew off her head with a shotgun.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. And this must have hit you, this kind of thinking. Well, I can't imagine how it hit you, because here you are, a young African-American who grew up in Queens.
Yeah, I grew up in the inner city, in a lower middle class family. And, you know, when you're that kind of kid and you watch TV and you watch movies, you tend to think that upper middle class white people have gotten it all figured out.
Because they did on The Lucy Show.
On The Lucy Show and every sitcom you've ever watched. It's all so perfect. And it's just like, if I could live in that house and I could have that car and I can grow up to be that person. And then suddenly I read Cheever and I go, oh, my God, they don't have it all figured out.
Yeah. Do you have a passage?
There's a section from The Country Husband. Francis Weed is talking to a young man who's eager to get out of Shady Hill, where most of Cheever's stories are set, this fictional suburb outside of New York. And the young man says, the way people clutter up their lives, I've thought about it a lot. And what seems to me to be really wrong with Shady Hill is that it doesn't have any future. So much energy is spent perpetuating the place and keeping out undesirables and so forth. And the only idea of the future anyone has is just more and more commuting trains and more parties. I don't think that's healthy. I think people ought to be able to dream big dreams about the future. I think people ought to be able to dream great dreams.
You know what's interesting? When we learn more about Cheever, though, we see that he actually didn't have that life for quite a while. He felt that he was overlooked by editors who were looking at other writers like J.D. Salinger. His family didn't have wealth, you know, immediately.
Well, his family had wealth, actually. He grew up in Quincy, Massachusetts, as you mentioned. His father was a shoe salesman. And then when the textile and shoe industries left the state, his father went almost bankrupt,
right.
And the family lost a lot, and suddenly they were on hard times. Cheever's mother had to go out and get a job, and, you know, it mortified the family. This is what they had become. So in a funny way, he knew both sides of that. He knew, you know, the good suburban life and the difficulties below the surface.
Well, I was thinking, too, of his own family. When he married and had a child, Susan Cheever, who became a writer in her own right, there were times that we're reading that they were barely getting by. They were living above his paycheck. And he also had a very complicated personal life.
Cheever himself was a very complicated man. He, like his father and like his brother, was a raging, nasty alcoholic. Several times his drinking almost killed him. He finally got himself sober in the 70s. He was also bisexual.
Yeah.
And absolutely tortured. He was, you know, as self-loathing about his sexuality as you can possibly be, where he had affairs with men, but he was just riddled with homophobia. And it was very difficult. And it was difficult for his family as well. He was, you know, a very indifferent husband towards his wife. And he was a very bullying father towards his children, especially Susan, his daughter you mentioned, and his first son, Ben, who was also a writer.
So complicated man. And yet you can draw a line, I'm told, from his writing to so many things we see today, Mad Men.
Perhaps because I'm a Cheever fan, but I feel like I see Cheever everywhere. You see it in Mad Men. You see it in Desperate Housewives, even the title Desperate Housewives. You know, I would even go out on a little bit of a limb and say it can be seen in Walter White, who's the chemistry teacher turned meth manufacturer in Breaking Bad.
Right.
You know, he is all but dead as that series begins, and he's trying to figure out, in some ways, literally and figuratively, a way to stay alive.
So where would you put Cheever in the pantheon? You have the Updikes. You have those that wrote about that troubled suburban waspy landscape.
It's funny. A lot of people would think because I like Cheever, I like Updike. Updike always felt alien to me. It felt so male. I couldn't relate to Updike at all. I still can't. With Cheever, it always felt much broader because he had wonderful stories about women and, you know, and their discontents as well. It wasn't just about men. I think he's still easily the best short story writer in America. I mean, no one came before him and no one has sort of taken the mantle since he passed away in 1982. The stories are so resonant, they're so deep, they're so elegantly written, but there's so much darkness and really a kind of emotional violence in those stories that I think, you know, even if you aren't going to cocktail parties and pool parties and living the great life, you understand what's going on with these characters and the way that they've kind of lost the thread of their own lives.
Well, James Walcott writes again in Vanity Fair that if you think of an image of a croquet mallet left derelict on the lawn, evokes sort of this, you know, broken merriment, or if the bar car of a commuter train gives off a stale whiff of failed promise and bitter alimony, then you should pause and pay homage to John Cheever.
It's absolutely true. You know, it's everyone who is, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and is looking back and remembering who they thought they would be. And whether or not, you know, the question with Cheever's characters often is, whose life are they living? Are they living their own life? Are they living the life that meets someone else's expectations? In most cases, it's someone else's expectations, and that's what crushes them.
Yeah. Well, cheery.
You know, and that's the thing. The stories aren't dreary. I mean, they're not necessarily, you know, the happiest people you'll ever read about, but the stories aren't dreary. They're beautifully written. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of poignancy. There's more than a little bit of misguided romance, but these stories are so alive and so vital that I think, you know, they're going to be resonant for generations to come.
So which ones would you recommend? You've already mentioned The Country Husband. What would you recommend if people want to pick it up and start reading?
I would say The Country Husband is a perfect place to start, but I also think this has a story called The 548, which is essentially, it seems like it's a revenge fantasy, but it's much more about holding people responsible for their actions.
Is The 548 a train?
The 548 is a train. Trains figure in very prominently in Cheever's stories because people live in the suburbs and they're usually going into the city to work. So trains are always there, and the 548 is a train, and the action begins on that train. Okay. I would also recommend Oh, Youth and Beauty, The Enormous Radio, which is, and you know, Cheever also did a lot of surrealism, and that comes in The Enormous Radio, but also in The Swimmer, which was made into a Burt Lancaster film.
The Man Who Swam Swimming Pools.
He goes home, exactly, from house to house. That's how he goes home, swimming people's swimming pools. And various things happen to him along that route.
Wonderful. We'll have the whole list at hereandnow.org. Here Now pop culture critic Renee Graham on the work of one of her favorite authors, John Cheever. And by the way, suggest your own at hereandnow.org or on facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Renee, thanks as always.
Thanks, Robin.
It feels like Cheever, doesn't it? Well, it is Thomas Newman's music from the 1999 film American Beauty. That's another work that Renee sees as inspired by John Cheever. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.